Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
This is Rebecca Buchanan, host of New Books Network, New Books and Popular Culture. And today I'm here with Natasha Lance Rogoff, who is the author of Muppets in Moscow, the unexpected, crazy true story of making Sesame Street in Russia. Natasha, thanks for being here with me today.
It's wonderful to be here with you, Rebecca. Thank you for having me.
So before we kind of get into your story of bringing Sesame Street to Russia, could you talk a little bit about, so this happened in the night, right? In the mid-90s. Why now? Why did you decide you wanted to kind of write about this now?
Well, I think that I had been thinking about writing it for a very long time because I started it back after we completed Sesame Street in Russia. The show aired in 1996, and I had journals from then and written quite a bit at that time. And then 9/11 happened, and two children later, and I put the book aside. And then in, after the Crimean invasion by Russia, and the increasing, deterioration of relations between the U.S. and America, as well as Putin's cracking down on independent media, which accelerated from that time, from the time that our show was taken off the air. I kept thinking that we were missing something in the U.S. in terms of understanding the people, the culture, the history. And somehow the popular media and news wasn't quite capturing it. You know, many academics did beautifully. I mean, there were so many great books that were written about Russia at this time, particularly focused on culture. And I thought that the, story of making Sesame Street in Russian was a wonderful way to translate the culture as I had experienced it as an American in the 1990s and also in the 1980s, as a journalist covering the Soviet Union. So the Sesame Street was made between 1992 and 1996, the first season, which ran 2 years. And then there was a second season and a third season and so on. But I felt like by 2016, every television show in the U.S. had a bad Russian character. I would say many of the TV series that featured Russians featured, Russians as oligarchs, thugs, criminals, prostitutes. And that just didn't ring true to the people, the 400 people on my team, artists who were puppeteers, writers, filmmakers. And I just thought, this wasn't an accurate depiction of the country, and it was a kind of a caricature. So, that sort of was festering for quite a while with me, and I really want, it bothered me because I had many close friends who were as committed as I was and so many people were in the West in order for Russia to be better, to be freer, to be kinder, and a part of the free world. So I just felt like, you know, there, it was an opportunity to take this experience and that other people would find it fascinating as I did at the time.
Well, and I will say that, you know, I was, Robin and I are the same age. Robin, you're one of your producers.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with Sesame Street, but I never knew that Sesame Street, you know, existed in Russia. So there's that, right? There's this little bit of history that, like, I was like, this is super fascinating, right? That existed, that, like, so for the, like, you know, two or three people that don't know, and I think Sesame Street has a longer history than a lot of people know about. So could you just maybe put this in sort of the context of Sesame Street and what Sesame Street was trying to do during the, you know, 80s and 90s?
Yeah. I mean, Sesame Street was an incredibly, I'd say revolutionary company, a nonprofit, you know, a children's television company that was a nonprofit that was set up to educate children around the world, create equality in terms of literacy, and to foster what I would call idealistic values of tolerance, compassion, and kindness, as well as teaching numbers and letters. So, you know, the company, the first show aired in 1969, and then sometime later, I think the first international co-production was in Mexico, but I'm not sure. I came in, you know, much later in 1992 and actually produced Plaza Sésamo, which is the Mexican Sesame Street series, which aired across Latin America, as well as on Univision in the U.S. Much earlier. So they had programs when I was working for them initially, I think in about 20 or more countries. They were primarily, I would say, countries that were certainly mostly more stable than Russia was at the time. And so a good number of the productions were in Europe, then in Latin America. And I believe there was one production that was done in Kuwait. You know, that's if my memory serves me right, that's kind of, you know, what I remember. And their success was phenomenal. You know, they had the golden touch, combining the research model with the production model, and some of the most talented artists who came together, you know, Jim Henson, John Stone, who was the first director, and an incredible team of writers. And the feeling on the set, from what I understand, because John Stone mentored me when I came to Sesame Street. I mean, I had no idea how lucky I was because I was new to children's television and didn't really know the folklore, you know. And I just, you know, he just jumped in and we became friends. And he came with me to Mexico to do the director's workshop. So I had no idea how lucky I was, you know, and then meeting Arlene Sherman, who was in charge of all the live action film and the animations for the American show. You know, she was utterly brilliant. She's passed now. But, you know, I got to work with people that were, you know, I had never worked with people like this before. It was an incredible experience. And, you know, the reach that Sesame Street had in the United States and the good that it did, you know, both in terms of social change and literacy, was, you know, incredibly impressive. So the same thing was happening overseas. A caveat, though, was that most of the productions were organized with state television. And whereas in the U.S., we had the beginning of cable and, you know, we had at least three TV stations and then many more. In most of these countries, it was much more circumscribed. So you were really, in most cases, working with a state broadcaster. So anyway, in the case of Russia, it was a different story.
Right. So one of the things, there's so many things about this that were great, your book that are great, but you divide it kind of into these three parts, and you bring in your personal experience. I do really appreciate that you're also like thinking of it from this, like being a woman in television, right? Being a woman in this situation, like being a woman in so many spaces, and dealing with this, but you kind of start with being introduced to Sesame Street and how you got thrown into this. So you were, it wasn't a love of children's television, it was a love of Russia that kind of brought you into this space. So can you kind of talk about, like, set up that, like, what you were doing, why you even got involved in this project, and what, you know, and some of that?
It was completely random. And I was, you know, I had just finished a documentary film called Russia for Sale, The Rough Road to Capitalism, where I had embedded, this was in between about 1989 to 91. And I spent 2 years making this film, which aired on PBS. I had embedded myself with communist fascists at their meetings. They were anti-capitalists, anti-American, and was filming many of these people, as well as the police chief in charge of economic crime, who was throwing people in prison for selling things like furniture. You know, so because speculation, i.e. selling things for a profit, i.e. not the state selling it, was illegal. So I thought, okay, I want to do that. And then the also followed a steel worker who ended up leading the strike in Leningrad, late now called St. Petersburg, against the Communist Party and the communist regime. So the film ended predicting the coup of 1991, which overthrew the Soviet Empire. And the night of the coup, I got a call from ABC, and then they wanted to air footage from the film I had just finished, because I had been living with some of the people, you know, making this film for such a long time, who were trying to overthrow then the you know, the new democratic government. So anyway, the Sesame Street executives, and this story is in the book, but two executives, Gary Nell, Steve Miller, showed up at one of my screenings in New York City and asked me if I would help them bring Sesame Street to Russia. And they had just watched my film. So I said, did you just watch my film? Because I don't know anything about children's television, and I actually don't know anything about children. And you know, the film is incredibly dark. I mean, it's following somebody who was in prison for 2 years. It's shot inside a prison in part two. And they said, look, you know, we've been trying to get this up and running for quite a while. We have potentially some support from USAID. Then Senator Biden had spearheaded congressional support for a original Russian version of Sesame Street. And, you know, this was the zeitgeist at the time. The project had bipartisan support. The idea was that we were going to help Russia, develop more open values so that they could join the, you know, global world of democracy. I thought this was a nutty idea. I mean, particularly great what they were going to do, but I thought I'm really not the right fit for this. And And then they just said, well, why don't you come down to the office, Sesame headquarters, and talk with us. So I did that a little while later, after talking to my sister and a bunch of friends. And I walked in, and of course it was this otherworldly, you know, such a fresh-faced, you know, enterprising young people who were saving the world and, you know, using media and television to educate children. I mean, it was a very positive environment. And having lived in Russia for the past 10 years, it was really different from what I had seen. And it was also a nonprofit company. So it was an actual company versus, you know, what I had lived my life doing, which was being an independent filmmaker and not working for a company. So I talked with the Sesame Street execs there, what they were trying to achieve with the show was really seductive. I mean, the idea of using television in this way, and as a filmmaker, the idea that you would use, you know, live action film, animation, writing, in order to model another vision of what the society could look like, of how people would interact and behave, but still have it be based on their own culture and their own values. And that you'd create the show with educators from that region so that the show would be very, you know, would reflect post-Soviet society in a comfortable way. We weren't not talking about importing a Disney show or something like that. We were talking about creating a new show with, you know, hundreds of artists, local artists and musicians. And I thought, wow, this is incredible. And then I was aware that so many of the people I knew that I had already chronicled through previous films, one for ABC, which was called Rock Around the Kremlin and was about underground rock and roll and how people, you know, musicians were persecuted and couldn't record their music or sell their music because the state owned the means of production and they didn't want rock and roll. There's a lot of writings about this. I wrote about it in a German magazine and for an English magazine about how, you know, the idea that, that rock and roll was, you know, poisoning Soviet youth. So there's a lot written about this. And I thought, wow, if I took this job, maybe some of these people could write music for this new show. And wow, that would be incredible, you know. Additionally, you had the state-owned television station. So what if we didn't do it with the state TV station? And I went to Sesame Street and said, well, if I did this, would you agree that we could develop it as a, you know, with independent producers? Like, basically, this could be a way of building infrastructure for independent media and transferring technology skills to the community of independent artists, as well as perhaps providing equipment that they didn't have, you know, which would help them develop their independent media, i.e. a free press. So that to me, you know, suddenly it was like, that was catnip to me. I thought, okay, I love that. This is great. This is a challenge. I could, you know, dig my hands into whatever. And that, you know, even though I was definitely intimidated, totally intimidated by the prospect of you know, producing a children's television show, because I knew nothing about that. I thought the other aspects of it were familiar to me. I had made films in Russia and, you know, worked with some crews. And I thought, you know, certainly it was going to be easier than making a documentary because it was a puppet show. So everybody would be nicer. I wouldn't be dealing with like fascists and and, you know, violent situations that I would be encountering. So.
And that did not like, so yeah, one of the like things that is really great is like in the story, there's that like, yeah, how do you navigate that? How do you navigate in this world, in this space where there's more freedom that people have not had and they have to kind of figure out what that means, right? But there's not complete freedom either. And so, I mean, you have many sort of stories in here for getting this off, you know, getting this off the ground. But one of the things I love is that you kind of talk about how you have to sort of navigate your relationships and what your values of the free press or how you want this to work with what some of the people you work with like think about or value, you know, how you kind of navigate those spaces. So can you talk a little bit about like some of those, you know, some of the key people that really helped you make this happen?
Well, obviously it's a group effort. I mean, you can't make a television series of 52 half hours in a country that has an extremely limited experience with making episodic television. The most that they had made before we did this was one TV show that had 12 episodes. And when we first presented the idea to our creative team, the guy who became the head of the he was the, I'm thinking in Russian, so the director of the filmmakers for the TV series, Sergei Novikov, he said, you know, that's impossible, you know, and you can't. And when we asked him, you know, the group to make production schedules, and they were like, you know, you can't do that. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen. And then someone else would say, you can't even write it down, because if you do, then, you know, that's even worse. You know? So, because it'll never work anyway. There'll be a coup. The camera will break. People will, you know, you won't arrive. Anyway, but the team that was, that I was able to assemble, you know, it's even hard to think about it now in the context of what's happened to their country and in Ukraine. And so many of them have had to flee lately, you know, in the last couple of months from the country, or some of them who are Ukrainian are afraid in Russia. And then on the other side, you know, what's happening and what their country is doing in Ukraine, it's horrible for them. But the crew that we created included some of the top children's television people, but it wasn't children's television, children's film and theater people. So most of the group had that background. And at the time, the film industry in Russia was black. Nothing was being produced because there was no money. And before that, all the money had come from the state because it was a communist state-run society. So there was this period of transition, which is exactly the period that we made Sesame Street in, where many of these people had no jobs. And at the time, I actually didn't know that. And when I spoke to Volodya Gramatikov, who is the chief director, literally in January of 2020, when I went back to Moscow and interviewed people, and he told me this story. And he said, you know, when you asked me to join you and become the chief director, I said, well, maybe. And I kind of played hard to get. And, you know, and then you chased after me. And he said, actually, I hadn't had a job for many months, and I was terrified that I wouldn't be able to feed my family. But he never told me that for like, you know, almost 30 years. And there were so many people. In the book, Leonid Zagalski is my buddy, my business partner, and he's quite a character, really fun character in the book. He's actually coming to the States soon, and I'm very excited that he's going to be able to get out for a little bit. And we had been working together previously for many years. And I don't think the show would have happened without his involvement. I asked his advice and guidance on everything. And he also connected me with people who knew him well. And in Russia, your personal relationships are everything, everything. In a society that is lawless, where there is no rule of law, where it's generally corrupt, these friendships are what protect you. And people trusted me. I had my own group of friends, but Leonid had his own group of friends too. And with him by my side, I was trusted. And then my American team, which included Robin Hessman, who was a brilliant filmmaker who I hired at 22, came in with no TV experience, but I had seen a film she had done, and I thought, this is an incredible film. It's so beautifully written, shot, and it's so soulful. I have to work with this person. But she was so young that my boss at the workshop, at Sesame Workshop, was like, no, that's not happening. And it took quite a while for me to politically within the company be able to convince the higher ups to allow me to add her to the team. And her, again, the show, you know, would not have been possible without her coordination and helping. And, you know, she spoke Russian fluently as well. And so, and was the same age as the younger cohorts that we were bringing in too. And she brought in many of her friends to be on the team also. So it was, you know, an incredible environment. And then, I mean, there's so many people that are involved in this that we literally, our team was 400 people by the end of it. So I can't, you know, even talk about everybody, but it's many, many, many people, as well as, you know, Irina Borisova, who's in the book, who was my my counterpart in terms of on the business side. And without her believing that it was possible to do this show and take the risk of investing her own money and sponsoring it, it would never have happened either. So there's a number of people who have since passed away who were absolutely critical in this process. It was all interlocking pieces, you know, so many different parameters that allowed this to succeed. And yet it did succeed. And it succeeded for, you know, more than 10 years and, you know, educated and helped millions of children across the former Soviet Union, including Russia, Ukraine, the entire, across 11 time zones. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that we need to think about in the future when we are, thinking about how to shift to help nations transition to greater openness.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it kind of read like the soap opera where, it, you know, something would go wrong and then last minute it worked, right? Like you kept figuring out or kept meeting new people or someone would come along at just the right moment when it was needed. And it all like last minute came together with everything. And I thought it was really interesting too, even thinking about like creating the puppets and what that was like and finding people who could. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, when you were sort of crafting and putting the show together, people would be worried that you wouldn't have anyone who's going to show up for auditions. And then you had hundreds of people come out and want to do this work. So you could see there was a lot of that like hunger or yearning to be a part of something like this, to be a part of something that was going to be new and different and bring that to the country and to the space.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And the atmosphere on the set was like nothing I'd ever experienced in Russia before. And we were, you know, both Russians and Americans working together, you know, as equals. And as a woman who ran this, you know, I was very attentive to being inclusive, making sure everybody felt welcome, and also engaging everybody's ideas. You know, we did not have a clear hierarchical system. I would say that was my intention. I was constantly bumping up against things like where, you know, a particular like the head writer, you know, wouldn't be as respectful to the women writers or something like that. And eventually we had to also fire people because of that. So, you know, there was some element of always trying to make sure that we maintained an environment that reflected the values that Sesame Street upholds. So, you know, that was very important, I think, to our creative group. You know, both the Russians and the Americans. Mm-hmm. Russians meaning not Russian. I keep saying Russians, but there were all different kinds of people there. There were Armenians, you know, especially a lot of Georgian animators and people from all over the place.
And your book, like, and at the time too, you're falling in love, right? Like, so there's your love. Like, there's so much going on at this. And I think we see both things that, you know, and some really frightening things when you get a call about the, you know, the space being invaded and you have to move out. There's this mix of these really fun and funny stories and then these really sort of terrifying spaces and that you have to kind of navigate during this time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was stop, start, run, sprint, be buried under the ground, be shot up. You know, I mean, it was like completely unpredictable and very, very, very tough, you know, extreme stress. And, you know, by the time I was pregnant, I really was like wondering if this was is this really a good idea? This is like not, there were many moments when it was absolutely amazing, emotionally, like just such a high, and then also very low times.
And it went from, and we know it gets filmed, but you went from like not being sure if you were going to air this to having it being aired on two major television stations, right? So can you talk a little bit about that, like that success when you, right, like you were saying, like it took years to get this off the ground. It was something that was never done before. And then you went from going, is it going to happen, to it happening and happening in the way that it did. So what was that? Can you talk a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah. I mean, as we were finishing the show, it coincided with an election period, a presidential election in Russia. And so many people thought that the current democratic, you know, or aspiringly democratic leader Boris Yeltsin would lose to Zhuganov, who was a communist, and that the country would then shut down again. And in that moment, that was all very real and terrifying for people. And we had all, we had all experienced over the past, a period of time, several attempts to take over the TV station. In 1993, there was an actual physical attack on the TV station. There were bullet holes still in the TV station at the entrance, and people there. The group trying to take over the station had brought tanks there. So that was where we were looking, coming from. And when the Sesame Workshop had an entire team of people, Steve Miller, Baxter Urist, Gary Nell, and another group from the Russian side, the Russian business side with Irina Borisova, and they were all trying to get establish interlocking degrees in order to air the show with Russia's largest television station, Astankino. And I was very focused on doing the production side at this point. So this team, I would talk with Leonid, my confidant and co-partner and all this stuff. But we, they were primarily running this and meeting with various potential sponsors to get the show supported, because you couldn't. So advertising had only just started. We had had advertising in America, everybody remembers, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. Well, it didn't exist in Soviet communist Russia. They didn't have that kind of advertising. They had advertising for the great proletariat, or the, October Revolution, glory to the October Revolution, and, TV shows celebrating tank drivers. So in this case, advertising had just begun, and there was a lot of money flowing into it from the West, which meant that if you have a society without rule of law, you also have corruption. So it was also quite dangerous. And it was only after the communist presidential candidate was defeated that this deal was able to happen, because then people who were investing, companies that were investing in the West, as well as Russians involved in advertising, felt confident that they weren't going to lose their investment. So through an absolutely incredible series of negotiations, this show ended up airing on Russia's two top TV stations. And they had never done this before. It was an unprecedented deal. There was a man who ran a new TV station in Tibet, which was Sergei Malashenko, who recently passed. And he was a brilliant man who was also brave man trying to change Russia for the better and change television. He was critical in this negotiation. Sesame Street, Nestle's, Simon Hewitt was another person from, I think, McKinsey Erickson, something like that. McCann Erickson. And then they just put this deal together, and it ran. The show was then going to be aired across the 11 time zones for 2 years. And there was a pickup deal afterwards for, a second season. When I heard about this, the success of this deal, I was already in the United States about to have a baby. So I had to leave to come back. My husband wanted to be there. And so I was thrilled. I just couldn't believe they did it. I just couldn't believe they actually pulled it off. But it was very exciting.
Yeah. And so then it aired all over, right? So your book goes through all this sort of great ups and downs and experiences and kind of brings in your experiences as well. And we could probably talk Sesame Street forever, but I'll ask you my kind of final question. But the book just came out, right? Like 2 weeks ago, maybe. Does that mm-hmm. sound about right? Is there anything either that you're working on now or anything with the book, you know, that you want to plug or talk about?
Yeah, you're the first person that asked me that. I absolutely hope, as a first-time author, it's very difficult to get the word out about the book. And I really hope that it finds its way to readers, because once they read the book, you know, then they're like, I love this. I mean, it's just been a great response from people who read it. But, you know, the real challenge is how to get the information out there and share it with people. I could even see this as a TV series, you know, like a fictional TV series, which then gets broader view for people who can, you know, connect with those same very compelling characters and, you know, this gripping story that moves super fast. But I think, you know, we had a tremendous impact by making this show. At the time it aired, the children just went wild for it. And the stacks of fan mail we got with children talking about how they love the Slavic Muppet, you know, Zeli Boba, because he's, you know, not afraid to make mistakes. And, you know, other children talk about, how they can, they talk about how it's so nice that they can trust, you know, people. So these ideas that were in a very fearful society that they lived in previously, not on the personal level, obviously, you know, in their own homes, they were safe and had lots of love, but just from the regime itself and the difficulties that existed under communism. And also afterwards, I mean, after communism collapsed, it was still very difficult for different reasons. But I take solace in thinking about the fact that the people that are leaving Russia now, who don't want to fight and are opposed to the war, grew up on Ulitsa Sazan. They're, you know, Russia's Sesame Street generation. They're in their late 30s, in their late 20s and their early 30s. The same people who are fighting on the Ukrainian side for freedom and independence, who became independent during, you know, the period that we were making this show. They are also Ulitsa Sazam's generation. They grew up on Sesame Street too. So for me, when I think about, you know, what is the legacy of Sesame Street in post-Soviet society, I think about that. And I believe that that we'll get another chance. And when we do, we should be ready.
Well, thank you, Natasha, for talking with me again. Muppets in Moscow, Natasha Lance Rogoff. Thanks for talking with me for New Books in Popular Culture. It's a fabulous book.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. I really appreciate it. Be well.